Hello and welcome to the Fit and Feminist podcast with fitness and nutrition coaches Lauren and Lindsay.
Our aim is to educate and empower women to take control and rebuild confidence with their health, fitness and lives.
We have the fitness facts and no-nonsense nutrition tips you need for success with a hefty dose of feminism thrown in.
With top bands and massive oversharing along the way, we hope you finish each episode feeling a step closer to the life and results you deserve.
If you'd like more of us or have a question you'd like answering on the podcast, you can message us at Lauren Randall Fitness and at Lindsay Wells PT and Nutrition.
All right, let's get started. Hi, Sophia.
Hi.
This is so natural and normal.
Are we actually recording now?
We are recording now.
Okay, good. At least I know.
The real one. We've said hi. We've been chatting for like 10 minutes. Didn't hit go.
How are you guys doing?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, before we start, I'm on my deathbed, basically. my throat's really sore. And if I have a coughing fit, I apologise to anybody that's listening. Just ignore me, basically.
Anthony sat literally right next to you.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm coming out of this with some kind of disease.
Yeah.
Great.
Probably. We might as well just snog.
Oh.
That's fine. That'll get the views up. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. Do it for the gram.
Bit of gal on gal action.
How are you, Sophia?
I am very good. Thank you. I'm excited to be here chatting to you guys about a really important topic, I think.
Yeah, well, it definitely is. But especially for you, it's definitely a sensitive one. And an important one. So how about we start with you explaining kind of why ADHD and nutrition is such an important topic to you?
So it's important. Well, I have it. I work with a lot of clients who have it as well. And I think more people in the fitness industry are realizing that there are really important things to take into consideration when they're working with clients who have ADHD, and the health, fitness, nutrition, food, it isn't just simple and straightforward. And that's for everybody, right? Like, ADHD doesn't mean that people are necessarily different in all ways. And I think when we're working with clients, we always have to deal with the individual in front of us. But when we work with people who have ADHD, that can certainly present some different challenges when it comes to us being able to support them as coaches. So I think the more people that are aware of that and aware of what these difficulties might be, then the better we're going to be able to support our clients.
One of the questions I had through was, how do I know if I have ADHD? Which I think that's probably a really good one to start with, because there'll be a lot of people, especially women, and especially women that listen to our podcast, that are going, I don't even know if I have it or not. I might, maybe, don't know.
I think it's really hard because there's loads of content online and reels that are like ADHD behaviors or stuff that you didn't know was ADHD. And it's really normal for people who don't have ADHD to have symptoms of ADHD, but it depends on the capacity to which the symptoms are impacting your day-to-day life. And for somebody who has ADHD, it's not a choice or fun or trendy. And it does seem to be that ADHD is becoming this more current thing. And when people say, oh, so do you think more people are getting diagnosed because it's cool to have ADHD? I don't necessarily agree with that either. I think more people are realizing they have it because we're talking about it more. And more people are realizing that if they do get a diagnosis, it's going to be a great way for them to understand themselves and know what they need to be doing to support themselves. But a lot of the symptoms of ADHD are just normal life stuff. And we all lead such busy and stressful lives anyway, that those lines can very easily become blurred. So I think for people with ADHD, it's knowing that the symptoms can at times feel debilitating and as though they are taking over. So it's the impact the symptoms have. And then obviously to know if you have it, that would be an assessment with a psychiatrist. Like, no reel on Instagram or post talking about symptoms. Or, you know, I get people all the time being like, oh, well, is this ADHD? Do you think I have it? And I can't diagnose anybody. Like, You know, it's speaking to a medical professional that is going to go through quite intense psychiatric assessments to be able to tell you whether you have it or not.
So you can't do one of those quizzes at the back of a magazine that's yes, no, no, yes.
Woo! No, definitely not.
Definitely the free lip gloss on the front.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I think, again, like I've said, so many symptoms of it, people will just be able to relate to in normal life anyway.
What are some of the questions that they go through in this psychiatric test that you just
mentioned? So they get you to start thinking about and open up about how the symptoms used to impact you as a child and how they displayed throughout your childhood. And I guess that is because they're trying to work out whether it's learned behaviours and coping strategies, or it is actually the way that your brain is wired. Because this is a thing with ADHD as well. It often gets grouped together with mental health and mental illness. And obviously somebody with ADHD could have ADHD and mental health issues as well, but they are completely separate things. So ADHD is the way that your brain is formed and was formed from a very young age. It's not something that you can like change or cure. You can learn how to support yourself and work with your symptoms and work with your brain rather than against it, but it isn't something that you're ever going to recover from. It's something that you are going to have to live with forever. And I think people understanding as well that it is different to mental illness is really important, because that breaks down quite a lot of the stigma attached to getting a diagnosis.
I have a friend who is wondering whether she has ADHD or not, and it's an 18-month wait list for getting diagnosed with a psychiatrist or at the wherever it was that she booked in. So if somebody is if you are wondering if you have ADHD and the symptoms are impacting your life, I would say get yourself on the list as soon as possible, because 18 months is a long time, especially if these symptoms are actually impacting your life in a negative way. Like, the sooner you're on that list to get seen, the better.
100%. Even if it's just a thought and it's like, well, I might have it, I might not, then yeah, I would definitely get on the list. And obviously, if people can, then go private. That's what I did, because my doctors were like, yeah, 2.5, 3 years. And of course it costs money. And I know that I'm in a privileged position to be able to afford to go privately. But then I was like, well, if I don't go on any nights out for 6 months and don't buy any gym kit for the next year, but I understand myself and my brain more and know how to support myself, to me, that was, well, it wasn't, that stuff wasn't even a sacrifice. It was like, I'm willing to do that. And, you know, really have to think about what I'm spending my money on to be able to afford to pay for the diagnosis, well, the assessment and then the diagnosis, that was something that was important to me. So I know it's not going to be accessible for everyone, but if you can go privately, then I would definitely recommend that.
How long have you, when were you diagnosed, when did you get your diagnosis?
The end of summer 2022.
So about 18 months ago, was it?
Yeah.
What kind of impact has it had on your life, knowing for sure?
So this is really funny, actually. And I always talk about stuff online in hindsight. So I knew that I would want to sit with the diagnosis for a little bit and like talk to my friends and my family about it and then talk about it online. And that was one of the reasons that I got a diagnosis, because I was like, well, if it's not ADHD, then what is it? Like, what's wrong with me? I need to know sort of what it is. And when I received the diagnosis, it was very much like, well, it confirmed a lot of what I thought already. And I just sort of skipped off and everything felt fine. And then I remember it got to Christmas time. So that was September. It got to Christmas 2022. And I had some time off work. I had more downtime. And on one hand, I was like, well, nothing changes because it's who I am. It's not going to go away. Like, I can learn how to support myself better. I can understand myself better. But I then started having loads of flashbacks from childhood, being like, oh my God, if I'd known I'd had ADHD then, I wouldn't have ended up in this situation, or maybe that would have played out differently. So I started thinking back to loads of stuff from the past that I put in a box and not really thought about, and all of these things and issues started coming back. So I was like, oh fuck, like probably do need some therapy to be able to work through all that stuff from a slightly different lens. Because I was very much like, oh, I just want a diagnosis. I don't want medication. I don't need therapy. Like, I've had therapy, I've dealt with stuff. And obviously, I'm always open to therapy and support for anything that comes up that I feel that I need that support with. But I thought I could get the diagnosis and then everything would be fine. And it was until I actually stopped to think. And I was like, okay, yeah, nothing's changed, but actually, everything has, like, my whole perception of everything and the ways that I've dealt with things, the coping strategies I've had. Obviously, we know it is all really relevant to food and food issues. And I grew up having loads of like eating disorders and issues with food as well. So I basically started replaying my life through the lens of knowing I had ADHD and was like, oh, fuck, like this is quite difficult to deal with. So I would say for anybody who is going to explore a diagnosis, make sure, because obviously, if you go privately and you then want therapy or medication, that would be paid for privately as well.
Yeah.
So that's where it's hard. And then long term, as long as you go through a private company that's like reputable and they follow all the correct procedures, then they will hand stuff over to your GP so that any medication and potentially future therapy will be funded by the NHS, but that's something you have to check with your GP before you go private. Because I know people who've prayed privately for a diagnosis and then asked for stuff to be passed over to the GP and their GP's declined it. So that can leave people in a really difficult situation.
Because they're left with a diagnosis and no help at that point.
Yeah. And dealing with that on your own is a lot. Not, and everybody's experience of it is going to be different, right? Like that was my experience. So it's not going to be the same for everybody, but it's something I'd definitely recommend that people bear in mind.
I'm just going to start by reading. This is not a question, but this person's just said, you know, I've got a million questions, but just want to say that I can't wait to listen. It's really debilitating to hear, read stuff from NT trainers about drinking water, getting more sleep, creating good habits, and it makes me feel like such a failure on the regular when my brain paralysis literally prevents me from doing the things that seem so easy and obvious to others. So just, you know, for someone to properly understand that and talk about it will really help. So, you know, hopefully we've got quite a few people who are going to be able to listen to this and be, you know, helped in some way by the questions that we've received and what we can get into today.
Yeah.
So
Yeah,
do you want
and
to
it is
try
really
another
hard, I
one?
think.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say to Lauren to start with the questions, but go ahead.
No, I was going to say it is really difficult when these things can seem like they should be so straightforward and other people can just do things without even thinking. And, you know, the barriers that people with ADHD face are very real. So, again, that's why a diagnosis can be helpful. And it's not, you know, one another reason I wanted to get a diagnosis was because I used to see a lot of content online of people being like, these are all the negative symptoms of ADHD, and that's it, you've got to live with it. And I wanted to be like, yeah, it can be like that, and it can be really difficult, but there's all of these different things that you can do and ways that you can learn to support yourself. And it is going to be harder, it is going to be difficult, but it doesn't have to be this awful, horrendous life sentence that means everything's shit and you can't make changes. You can make changes, but it's just learning the best ways to support yourself with your ADHD brain.
So most of our clients and listeners are women. Are there any specific, like female specific symptoms to look out for? Does it show up the same in men and women? Like what are some of the symptoms we should be looking for if somebody does think they might have ADHD?
So the symptoms do show up quite differently in men and women. Men tend to display more of like the hyperactivity than women display, and women tend to be better at masking the symptoms. For women, it tends to be feeling a lot of overwhelm, like a constantly busy brain, trying to focus on a million different things at once, getting very distracted, always multitasking. So struggling to sit still, constantly getting up and down. But again, it's quite easy to see how a lot of people live like that anyway, just because of how our lifestyles are and how we've sort of adapted to constantly being on the go and feeling like we always have to be productive. So yeah, really struggling with a lack of attention unless it's something that they find very interesting is common in women. Hyper-focusing, so getting really stuck into tasks and then almost switching off to everything around you. That's very common in women. The food issues, I would say, are probably, I mean, I don't actually know if they are more common in women than men, but pretty much all of my female clients who have ADHD have struggled with food stuff as well. So I think probably because there's more pressure on females from society in general anyway, in regards to looking a certain way, always dieting, like, you know, trying to fit this ideal, I think that is probably going to show up more for women with issues with food, with issues with body image as well.
So what are sort of the links between ADHD and relationship with food and eating disorders?
So all of the symptoms that we know of, if we apply those directly to food, that's how they can show up. So hyper-focusing on foods, eating the same things again and again and again. And then it's really common that one day you would just wake up and that same food that you've been eating every day for the last year, the thought of it just turned your stomach. It's like this switch just flips and it's like, oh my God, the thought of that is making me feel sick, even though I've lived off it for ages. So yeah, hyper-focusing on different foods, forgetting to eat and not being in a regular eating schedule, really common for people with ADHD. So whether somebody is medicated or not, because your brain is going at 100 miles an hour, it's really common that your hunger signals would completely switch off. So likely to not feel hungry earlier in the day. And then when you do start eating later and maybe stress from the day is starting to settle down a little bit, then hunger comes back with a vengeance and ending up overeating, which massively increases the risk of binge eating in people with ADHD. There's a 30% increased risk of struggling with binge eating if somebody has ADHD. Sensory issues with food are really common in people with ADHD. So struggling with different textures and tastes, but not to the point where it's just like, oh, it's a preference. It's like, no, the thought of that makes me feel sick. The smell of that, that, like for me, raw meat, absolutely not. Can't touch it, can't see it, can't even have it in the fridge visually.
Are you a vegetarian?
No, I only really eat chicken, but it's usually always pre-cooked chicken. Or if it's raw, then my husband would have to cut it up and cook it.
So what are some, like, is there any like common food that you've noticed that your ADHD clients are all a bit like bleh about?
No, it just, quite a lot of them don't like dairy, like creamy, I don't like creamy stuff either, but like creamy stuff, slimy foods. But again, it wouldn't be like, oh, I could just have a bit of that and ignore it. It would be like, if that's gone anywhere near the rest of the food I'm eating, then I can't touch it. So quite extreme with sensory issues and preferences with food. So then it's clear to see how another sort of eating trait for people with ADHD is like food rituals and safe foods, which can then link into hyper-focusing and obviously eventually result in disordered eating symptoms. If people have foods that they deem as safe, that they're in a routine of sort of sticking to those same foods as well. And then sleep issues are very, very common in people with ADHD. And we know that a lack of sleep or like a dysregulated sleeping pattern can massively impact hunger hormones and food choices. So that's going to have even more of an impact.
And body image as well, lack of sleep, and it all just ties in together. I'm just sat here thinking, God, like having an ADHD brain and all of that going on is a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of tabs open and a lot of things to be trying to think about and control. And I'm not surprised that there's such a high link to ADHD and disordered eating or eating disorders, listening to all of them.
And then people with ADHD had always, well, not always, but often describe themselves like as perfectionist, all or nothing. And we know a lot of bullshit that we see in the fitness industry is going to extremes, meal plans, drastic calorie restriction. And there's two sides to an ADHD brain. You almost want to be told everything you need to do to make it easier so you don't have to think about it. But then most of us have got like a little internal rebel that always wants to break rules as well. And that's the impulsive side. So it's clear to see how that on plan, off plan, on track, off track. I know the three of us talk about that a lot. Lindsay's dying in the background.
Yeah, that was a pretty subtle cough that one.
Trying to swallow it. Oh, bless you. Yeah, like that all or nothing mentality, again, massively increases the risk of disordered eating. And then it's very easy for people with ADHD to develop obsessions with tracking food, restricting food, cutting food groups out. And that all is likely to lead to yo-yo dieting, extreme weight fluctuations. And then there can be a massive lack, and I really struggle with this at times, a massive lack of desire to make food or to even eat. Like some days I just see eating as a complete inconvenience, which is why I'm so passionate about people, especially people with ADHD, staying in a regular eating routine. Doesn't matter if you feel hungry, doesn't matter if you want it, doesn't matter if you have oats three times a day instead of proper meals, like just getting something in is so important. And realizing that even if that desire isn't there, that doesn't matter. Just do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's like kind of like we tell all our clients about regular eating so that we can stop this binge restrict cycle. A lot of what you were saying then, it's like resonates with back when I had like really bad disordered eating. It's all kind of linked, and I don't think I've got ADHD or anything, but a lot of my clients who display those kind of similar signs, but I guess with somebody with ADHD, it's almost like to that next level of uncontrolled, like the inability to control those things.
Yeah, it just feels like a lot of it can feel like such a natural impulse. And then we get as well a higher hit of dopamine from certain foods. So that's where if somebody is not eating properly through the day, allowing themselves to become really, really hungry, then when they do start eating and dopamine starts coming through, like it feels great, it tastes amazing, it can be really hard to then tune into hunger signals and, you know, be able to stop eating or prevent overeating.
We've actually had a question, which is what links food choices and ADHD? And that's a question. And then she's put dopamine hits and the full switch.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is like there's so much that links food choices with ADHD. And it depends on different people, because we know that foods that tend to give us the most dopamine, higher calorie, higher processed, higher sugar foods that we don't want to be cutting out of our diets completely. And then again, the all or nothing mindset that can come with ADHD, people can think, oh, I can't ever have that, I shouldn't have that, or then I've fucked it if I've had it. So it leads to that spiral, which is why including those sorts of foods in small amounts for people with ADHD is so important. And then for people with ADHD as well, setting your environment up is so important with food. And it's not that you shouldn't have unlimited access to those foods or it's bad to have them. But if you've got biscuit tins out on the side in the kitchen, bars of chocolate in the fridge that you're opening, I mean, who keeps chocolate in the fridge anyway?
What sort of psychopath is putting chocolate in the fridge?
Some of my clients do, and I'm like, it's just, okay.
My husband has it in the freezer.
Oh my God, that's
whole nut in the freezer, Toblerone in the fridge. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because if you put Toblerone in the freezer, you're not going to be able to eat it at all.
I'm surprised it's got any teeth left, to be honest.
Absolute savage.
Yeah, it's John in it. Oh. Angry John.
Angry rugby John.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I'm never coming around to your house for some Toblerone in the fridge. Yeah, that's still weird. But yeah, so like, you know, smaller packs of these things and not keeping them in eyesight, because with ADHD, we love like visuals. So having things out can make it very, very difficult. And for my clients with ADHD, I try and get them to think about different ways of them getting dopamine in their meals. So like different tastes and textures can be really popular for people with ADHD. Like I love having hot and cold food together. That gives me dopamine. Can we find dopamine in more nutritious ways, like different colors on your plate, making your meal more mindful, slowing things down, tuning into your senses as you're eating, and realizing that, yeah, okay, we get an increase in dopamine from highly palatable, higher calorie, highly processed foods. So can you allow yourself to eat those things after you've had a nourishing and a satisfying meal? And that is going to help. But I'm always honest to my clients as well. And obviously, yeah, we want to find dopamine in other places, but nothing is going to be as quick, easy, accessible, and tasty as food. Nothing is going to give you that hit like food does.
So it's like about hitting all of the senses as much as you can in a meal. So like the crunch, the smell, that you maybe using your hands as well. Does that help? Or like as a
that might be a bit messy, but
spaghetti.
I'm thinking like I'm thinking more like sushi than like spam
fry with your hands. Yeah, I mean, if we think of eating as well in a childlike way, that's really popular for people with ADHD. So like picky foods, having them all out on a plate so you can see them. Again, this is stuff that we'll talk about with all of our clients, but instead of eating out of packets, can you get your food out on a plate so you can see it? It slows it down as you're eating it. You're more conscious of how much you're having rather than just eating out of packets, eating out of bags. You get to the bottom of the pack and you've not even tasted any of what it is you've been eating. So
elbow deep in Pringles.
Yeah. But then if you had all of those Pringles out on a plate or in a bowl, you'd probably get halfway through and be like, right, should probably stop now. So yeah, dopamine from food. I mean, do you know what? Loads of people talk about that as a negative. I think it's fucking great. Like being able to eat a brownie and it feeling like an orgasm. Like,
I don't think you need ADHD to have an orgasm off a brownie, to be honest. My personal experience.
That's my favorite food.
It literally is. Brownie is my absolute favorite food. I've done a brownie taste test around Yorkshire. I know the best brownies going.
Where are the best brownies in Yorkshire?
Well, on this specific taste test that we did, it was Yoke Farm Kitchen did really good brownies.
Where's that?
Is it Minskip?
Yeah.
Minskip.
Where's Minskip?
I actually have no idea.
Well, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like just this mysterious place out
mysterious.
In the city. They do really good brownies.
I need to go.
Yeah, actually, to be fair, I didn't, and none of the places in this taste test were from Leeds, and I've seen some of your posts, and I'm like, holy shit. They look
good. Oh my God.
Oh, you're one in York this weekend. I'm like, oh, this looks amazing.
Yeah, I'm literally surrounded by like insane bakeries with amazing food. But this is why working on your food relationship when you have, well, working on it anyway is so important. But when you have ADHD, to actually genuinely be able to enjoy these foods without guilt, without resentment, without it having a negative impact on your health, so important, because you can absolutely get yourself to a place where you don't have to nail 4 brownies to be enjoying them. And you can eat these things regularly, be getting those incredible feelings and dopamine hits regularly, but in a healthy and a sustainable way.
So one of the questions we had was, where do I start on the impulsive, not actually hungry snacking? Like, what would be a starting point for somebody with kind of all of this going on?
So I think when you aren't hungry for a snack or to be eating, it's realizing that there's different types of hunger. So I'm guessing this person means like physical hunger, but it could be emotional hunger. It could be like boredom. It could be because they aren't finding happiness and fulfillment in any other areas of their life. So it's how can we add those things in and add them in regularly and also identify the type of hunger that you're experiencing. So that's going to take slowing everything down, which is a really common theme for everyone, especially people with ADHD, and asking yourself, what is it that I actually need in this moment? And what is going to make me feel better long term? Because again, like we've said, in the moment, food is great. Nothing's really going to come close. I say nothing's going to come close, but it's really common for people who have ADHD to also have struggled with drugs, alcohol, sex, gambling, online shopping, like all of these quick, impulsive things. So it's viewing that hunger as a signal from your body that it needs something. But the more you start to look outside of it just being food, it's going to be easier for you to work out what it is you need. But to get to that place, you need to be implementing a pause before you eat, which is hard. Like, it's super advanced. And for people with ADHD, having a visual to remind them can be really helpful. So like, I've got clients who have a post-it note on their kitchen cupboard or on the fridge or on their desk or the table, maybe where they eat, that just says pause to remind them to just check in with how they're feeling and if they genuinely want the food that they're about to eat. A couple of my clients have like made like a nice picture of the word pause and popped it in a photo frame and it's on the desk. I've got a tattoo on my hand because even though I talk about this stuff all day, still something that I struggle with now at times. And this is the thing with ADHD, like, it's realizing that you can make so much progress with this stuff and then still find it really difficult at times.
It's actually a good tip even for people without ADHD. Like, a lot of the clients I work with on their relationship with food, disordered eating, like, there's so many similarities going on here with what people are struggling with or without ADHD. Although mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe some people need to get an assessment. There's similarities.
I think so many more people have it. Sorry, I was going to say, I think so many more people have it than what we realise. Or at least traits of it. They're on the spectrum somewhere. Maybe not enough to qualify for an ADHD diagnosis, but on the spectrum in some way. And then, yeah, all of this stuff is relevant for people that just want to be able to be more conscious of the food that they eat. But again, that reflects our lifestyles nowadays, doesn't it? Constantly on the go, always busy. People flying around like headless chickens, just saying, no, I don't have the time to stop. I don't have the time to think about the choices I'm making, eating on autopilot, just grabbing at food without even realizing what they're eating. Like, that's all symptoms of the lives that we lead nowadays.
I really like the idea of having like a visual, something visual just like placed there. I don't know why I've never thought of doing that before, because I'm very visual. So if like I had like a nice picture saying like what your client does, saying like take a pause or, you know, something nice, and I'm like, oh, just to make you think for that second, just to pause. And that, yeah,
got it.
I'm gonna use that more with clients.
I've got it on mugs. You can get mugs with pause on. You can get it on like key rings. You can like even reminders on your phone. So if
you put a label on my velvetizer or my hot chocolate pot, pause. Chill the fuck out.
Or like pop-ups in your calendar can be really useful as well.
Yeah, like if there's a time of day that you know is, you know, a time for you that's when you're going to go for the fridge or go to, you know, having a binge or you're losing focus or whatever, you know that time of day, if you set a reminder in your calendar to pop up with something, that's a great shout.
Yeah.
I think, like you say, a lot of people, again, just regular clients, some who have said to me, I've read, you know, the sort of criteria as it is for, you know, ADHD, and I think I'm, you know, it's me, and have not yet been diagnosed. But those are also, they also tend to be people who are, you know, the things that you've described, where they're quite busy as well through the day, a busy brain, struggle to sort of concentrate on things. And then when they are not stressed and working and busy, you know, in their day life, and they go home and there's like this kind of stop, and they just almost can't deal with the stop. They don't know what to do with themselves in a moment of more calm. And that time of night, we know, is the time that most people will make poorer food choices or overeat because either, you know, they're distracting themselves from another emotion or they're bored, you know, and it's like you say, that sort of thing of just tuning into actually what do I need right now? And maybe, yeah, you're going to find some comfort in food and that's fine, but it's making more of a, you know, a conscious choice, I think. But it's that sort of, you know, all of the things together, isn't it, sometimes that lead to those decisions, which then spiral into that, like, ah, why can't I do this? What's wrong with me? And that self-criticism again, which is just not helpful.
It's not. Like, that self-criticism, self-shame, self-comparison, that just makes everything so much harder. And we know that's the case for people who don't have ADHD as much as people who do. But for people who do, we tend to feel things at very extreme ends of emotion. So again, it's a bit like that switch. I don't give a shit. I don't care. Or actually, it's the worst and the most painful thing in the world. So then when you are sort of prone to, I don't want to say over-dramatizing stuff because it does feel very real, then those times when things do feel difficult and do feel impossible are likely going to have much more of an impact on somebody mentally for people that do have ADHD. And that's where then obviously people who have ADHD are at an increased risk of struggling with mental illness as well. But I think we need to be talking about these things so much more separately, because then people need to deal with the mental health issues separately to dealing with their symptoms of ADHD as well. And I think so many people, this is a bit of a tangent, but are wrongly or rightfully diagnosed with depression and or anxiety, and they're medicated for those things, but it's actually ADHD that they have. And if they knew that and they were tackling the ADHD, then yes, of course, they could still be suffering with depression and anxiety as well, but they'd actually be getting the treatment and the support for the underlying issues that's causing the mental health spiral.
What is the treatment or medication for ADHD?
So there's lots of different ones. And it depends sort of, again, on the individual and what they respond better to. But most of the medications are stimulants. So they allow you to focus more on what it is you want to be doing. So instead of having, the way I describe it, instead of having like 100 tabs open in my brain, I have, when I've took my medication, I have like 15. And I feel that that's more a normal sort of brain level of overwhelm, I guess. It allows you to focus on getting things done rather than like sort of starting one task and then going on to something else and getting up and, you know, so it allows you to be more focused, have a clearer mind, be able to deal with stress better as well. Things don't feel as overwhelming. Because I know for me, if, say, one little thing in my day doesn't go to plan, that can feel like literally the worst thing in the world. Like, life is going to end because, I don't know, the postman didn't turn up in the time slot that they said they were going to. Whereas you're able to be much more rational about things, much calmer.
I'm just thinking, what would happen if a non-ADHD brain took this? Because this sounds great.
Yeah, it is great. Well, depending on the dose, it's quite fun or not fun, depending on how you view it, working out what dose you need, because you've got to try different ones and different dosages to see how, because it's not, and again, this is why the medication is very different to antidepressants. It doesn't take a while to get in your system, like you have an immediate benefit or reaction to it. It's not something that builds up. So if you take a dose, like, I tried a lower dose, didn't really feel anything, upped it a little bit, had some positive benefits, and then thought, oh, well, if I have a higher dose, are the positive benefits going to be even better? So went for a higher dose and I was absolutely off my face. I was in the gym, chewing my face off, in the toilets, like ringing my husband, like, can you come pick me up? I can't drive. I couldn't see straight. Like, I felt wired. And that you have to be really careful with ADHD meds and caffeine as well. So I love coffee, and I knew I had to find a dose where I could have a lower dose to be able to have still a couple of coffees throughout the day. So yeah, that was a journey in itself. But
You're just like massively overstimulated when you're on that higher dose, and just couldn't even focus at that point. It was just too much.
yeah. It's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. But and not everybody with ADHD wants medication, or it's appropriate for them to use it, or that, some people can't use it for various health reasons. But I think if you do have ADHD, trying it is a really good shout.
Yeah, if you can, why would you not? Kind of thing. It's like HRT. If you can take it, why would you not want to at least try and see what
And
happens?
see how it reacts for you, because some people might try it and absolutely hate it. And then some days I don't take it, I don't feel that I need it. And sometimes as well, there's a lot of benefits to having ADHD and being able to focus on loads of different things at once. And
You passed it
sometimes,
on the nose. Who's the string? Who's the
yeah,
string?
what's
Sorry.
happening? But yeah, like sometimes. If I don't have like as much of a schedule of a call at this time, podcast at this time, then, and I've got loads of stuff to do on my to-do list, I know that I'm super productive in the morning. So I always try and front load a lot of my work. And if I know that I've got a set day to get lots of different things done, sometimes doing a little bit of that and then having a break and going and doing that actually can work for me. So again, it's sort of understanding yourself, what you need, your working style, and knowing the differences for you when you're using the meds and when you're not. Because some of my clients who have meds wouldn't be able to function without them. And there's a bit of, well, it's getting better now, but there has been a recent shortage. So that's been difficult for a lot of people. And then others of my clients have tried meds and hated them. So, yeah.
I guess the shortage is because now so many more people are aware of it and getting diagnosed. So there's more people needing the medication. So hopefully they'll be able to keep up with the demand soon.
It's getting better now, and I think that will come in time as they start supplying to meet the increased demand. But yeah, I just think so many more people are realizing actually, yeah, my brain is formed differently, and it's going to be super helpful for me to understand myself more.
Yeah. Did you have any other questions? Did you have some questions from your end?
Have you got any others, Lynns?
No, I think we've covered them all in conversation, which is good.
So there's one about best way to go about a diagnosis, but we covered that sort of right at the start, didn't we? So do you notice ADHD traits with your eating now, even after all this time? Yeah, 100%. Every day. Like I said, the lack of desire to eat and to make food is really strong for me. So that's where, sort of, I guess, being in the fitness industry and education on how important it is to be fueling your body and, eating regularly is important. Planning in advance is super important for that as well. So having quick and accessible foods. And then that feeling, I did a post about it last night, of feeling a bit sad after a meal's finished, like
I
a
saw
really,
that.
yeah, like a little bit of sadness after you've enjoyed a meal. And again, that's often, and people relate to that whether they've got ADHD or not. But for people with ADHD, if they aren't finding dopamine in other places, or they're doing a job that they don't really enjoy, which a lot of people have to do, like not everybody is as lucky as us to be able to do something that they feel super passionate about, then that can lead to that feeling after meals and then people seeking out more and more food. So I do notice that in myself as well. Sometimes with a really busy brain, it's very difficult to feel hunger and to feel fullness. Like sometimes after a meal, 10, 15 minutes later, I'll be like, oh, I've eaten too much, but I didn't realise at the time. So yeah, I definitely still notice traits with my eating now, but I'm more aware of them. And then when I'm not aware of them and things just happen, there's just no judgment or shame there. It's like, it is what it is. I'm human, I'm trying, and that's always enough.
I was literally just going to say, like, I'm so open about all my old, like, disordered eating things in relation with food stuff. And then a client asked, it was a while ago now, they're like, when was the last time you felt, like, guilty for eating something? I was like, so long ago. Because a lot of this work, it's not that the habits and the traits necessarily are gone forever, but it's that when they do pop their head up, you can now respond in a place of compassion rather than guilt and shame and did it. It's not like, oh, I've ticked all the boxes, I'm never gonna overeat ever again, or I'm never gonna have these traits ever again. It's that if they do pop up, I can absolutely be okay with that and handle it fine and move on with my life.
Mm-hmm. It's learning from these things as well, isn't it? It's realizing it's so much of this is a journey. You aren't ever going to be, whether it's food relationship, whether it's ADHD, whether it is mental illness, like, you won't ever be fixed, because as humans, what does that even mean? Like, yeah, it's just part of life.
Do you notice any changes in your symptoms, as it were, in your traits around your cycle? Do you have, like, no, there's no, it's not, it doesn't affect it, hormones don't affect it?
No, I track my cycle, so I know where I am in my cycle. But no, for me, like, I can be super hungry randomly with no link to hormones. I can have cravings at times. But again, I think so much of our monthly cycle, and I'm not wanting to downplay anybody who struggles with, like, their cycle and PMS at all, because some people really do, and that's obviously valid and real, but a lot of it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, if you tell yourself you're going to be starving the week before your period, of course you are going to be, because you're focused on food more, you're thinking about it more. If you tell yourself,
show up to a training session, like, I'm going to lift like shit, I literally have clients show up, they're like, I'm going to lift like shit today because I'm due on next week, and I'm like, what?
Yeah. Where's the logic there?
What? Like, and then they're like, smash out a sesh, and I'm like, so you thought you were going to do shit and you haven't. And so I try and, like, prove to them that just because of one thing doesn't mean it's necessarily true. Just try and challenge them on their thinking a little.
100%. And I think, you know, people get cravings for all different types of reasons, but mainly for not allowing themselves to eat stuff or telling themselves they shouldn't have stuff. Then that's all they can think about and all they want. Like, and we know as well, if people constantly have cravings and always, and I'm going to say this and people will be like, take it the wrong way, always give in to them without actually challenging if that craving is the food that they think they need, or it's their body asking them for something else, then you then create a habit with that craving, so that when those feelings come up, it's naturally wired in your brain that you crave sugar, you give yourself sugar. So those cravings will come harder and faster. And actually, the more you work on that, the less cravings are going to come anyway, regardless of where you are in your cycle. But if every time, 2 days before your period, you're like, I always want chocolate, cravings come, you give yourself chocolate, the cravings just come even more. So no, I don't notice a change in my cycle. And like, on medication as well, that can massively support people with ADHD with cravings and urges and impulses with food. So that's something to...
Does it help really impulses with anything, or just specifically with food stuff, or just anything that they're...
Impulses in general, because you can think clearer. But there's lots of research. So some ADHD meds are used to help people with binge eating disorder as well.
I was going to say, like, so many of these symptoms are so similar to, like, disordered eating beyond ADHD stuff, and the tools to help are the same beyond the information that you can get for ADHD. The tools are the same, like therapy, the pause, mindful eating, like exercise, all of these things are just exactly the same. You just need more support, not just, but there's just more support required.
You need to be more intentional with it.
Yeah.
ADHD. Yeah, for sure. And then, so this question was on the story box, the question box on my story, and I've referred them on, this person on, to a dietitian. But they've said, I get dopamine from planning a binge as well as actually binging and feel awful after, help. So I had a little chat with them and then sent them this amazing dietitian's details. And yeah, there's definitely, that's definitely a thing. So it's preempting something that you know is going to give you that rush and those endorphins in the moment that can start to give you those feelings as well. So, but again, people without ADHD will get this with different things. So like planning, a lot of people enjoy like planning a holiday and they get great feelings from that, or planning a trip. I mean, I couldn't leave it anything worse because I hate planning holidays and stuff, but some people really buzz off that, don't they? So they're getting those good feelings, those endorphins, that dopamine. But again, for people that struggle with binge eating and who get a higher dopamine response from those certain foods, the planning, the preparing, the thinking about foods, the food preoccupation, that can increase dopamine for some people as well.
So why did you pass that person to a dietitian rather than...
Because I guess when somebody is aware of their binge eating to the extent where they're planning it and it's causing them quite a lot of food preoccupation, they're probably going to meet the criteria for binge eating disorder. So that is where it would be a dietitian that they need to speak to, because that's at the point where it is an eating disorder. And I think we need to be, so like binge urges, binge behaviors, it's really common for people to struggle with those things and not meet the criteria for binge eating disorder. And that's fine. But when it's at the extent where the thought of just planning a binge is creating dopamine, then that's, I think, where it's gone a little bit too far.
Yeah, yeah. See, I think my head would have gone, go to a GP. I think I would have, that's where my first port of call would have been, not to a dietitian. I didn't realise, actually, that would be who you would send somebody to first.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It depends on the individual, because with GPs, again, there's going to be waiting lists, and not that we shouldn't be trying that point of call first and getting on a waiting list, but if people are wanting help and support more immediately, then looking at a private dietitian is going to be a better option. Again, like affordability wise.
Yeah, sure. One more question.
So how to know if you are if you have ADHD, again, we've sort of covered that,
mm-hmm.
start, haven't we? Cross over with hypermobility. So this is a really interesting one, and I don't actually know why, but there's again a 30% increased chance of somebody with ADHD struggling with hypermobility as well.
That's mad to me. That is not a link I think I would have ever made.
And I don't know why. So in the general population,
is there a why that you know?
There will be, but I don't know of it. But in the general population, 20% of people struggle with hypermobility. But in people with ADHD, 50%. Of people with ADHD.
Wow.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wild.
And this just shows, when we're talking about like workplaces and just society in general being more facilitating for people who do have ADHD, it's for the physical symptoms that can come with it as well. Because hypermobility is one of them, exhaustion, fatigue. I mean, there's so many like physical symptoms that can come with it too. So yeah, I think we need to be thinking about it in that way as well.
Woo! Learned a lot. Yeah, that was bloody good, Sophia. She's good, eh?
We could talk about it all day, couldn't we?
I'm sure. Have you got any, like, say, top tips that you have found, for anybody that is listening who knows that they do have ADHD, have you got, you know, a few things that you could say like have really helped you to sort of manage your day-to-day life around food that you could pass on?
So the visuals, like we were talking about, are super powerful. Just like little reminders, leaving stuff out for yourself as well and putting stuff in strange places. So like I will forget to take supplements, but I just leave my supplements where my breakfast bowl is, and like putting stuff in weird places to remind you to do things can be really, really helpful as well. So you've got that visual, you're going in the cupboard, whatever you need to be doing is there with something that you're always going to do regardless. When excuses come, so things like, oh, I'll just finish this bit of work and then I'll make a meal, or I'll skip the gym, it's then putting on the end of the excuse, but so it's not allowing yourself to just point blank give yourself that excuse or start to battle with yourself in your brain. It's like, I'll get this bit of work done and then I'll make my meal, but I know I'm probably not going to do that. And actually, if I just go and make the food now, then it's done, I'm fueled and I can crack on. So it's not just allowing the excuse to play out. It's almost challenging yourself and playing devil's advocate a little bit, because that is what so many people with ADHD struggle with, that constant decision fatigue, that overwhelm, that, oh, I'll do it later, I'll put it off. So that is my second tip. And I think we talk about this all the time with our clients anyway, but starting small, just small steps in the right direction without having to be perfect, trying not to over-dramatize the times when things don't go to plan, because that is just life. And realizing there's always something you can do. So imperfect action is very, very important for people with ADHD as well.
Awesome. Lovely. Right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
A really, really helpful episode for people.
If anybody's got any other questions on the back of anything we've chatted about, then feel free to message me.
Yes, Apollo, Sophia Apollo Nutrition.
Yes.
Is the handle, I think.
Yes.
I think so, clearly. <On there. laughs> Well, we'll tag her anyway when we put the recording out.
Yeah, we'll do. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
See you later, girls.
See you later.
Bye. Bye.